session number 4814, reel 1.
Mr. Wyatt, reel 1. Could you tell me, first of all, Mr. Wyatt, when you first joined the army?
Sometime in June 1940.
And why did you join?
I was conscripted.
And which unit did you go into?
The 2nd Battalion, the Surrey Regiment.
And now we can't go into your early service, but later on, in 1941, you found yourself in Malaya.
That's correct.
Can you tell me how you came to be there?
We left the Clyde in 1941, December 1941, and we joined the embassy, a ship called the Embassy of Japan in Clyde, and from there we went to Singapore, and from Singapore we made our way to Alastair in North Malaya.
Was that a British base?
Alastair was a British base on the Siamese or the Indochina border, as it was then. It's in North Malaya.
Can you tell me what happened to you there?
Yeah, we had about, from March, we had about 6 months of training in the rubber plantations. That's where we were stationed. And then we were told, like, to stand to on December the 7th. We heard the Japanese were preparing all. And I was in A Company, and we were told to attack the police station. We stood tall all night long, and just about dawn before that day, we were told to stand in our own positions because the Japanese had attacked through a place called Singora. And from that moment on, we started to withdraw.
Before we go on to the withdrawal...
Yeah.
Can I ask you one or two things
about
what you've already said?
Yeah, sure, I'd like
you
to ask me more, yeah.
You said that when you first arrived in Alastair, you did training in the rubber plantations.
Yes, yeah.
What did that involve? Can you describe what the training involved?
Yes, we would attack through the rubber trees, attack the so-called Japanese positions, and the training would last from about 10 o'clock in the morning to about 4 o'clock. In the evening, and then we'd repeat that every day. And
what were the main problems that the?
The main problems were of course were prickly heat, and thirst, because we weren't used to the conditions, and of course malaria started to break out. That was our first.
Your first problems,
yeah.
But with the training in the rubber plantations, were there any problems with that training?
Yes. We'd go through the paddy fields and we'd find that there'd be something itching on our legs, for instance, and we looked down and there was a leech, and we wouldn't take any notice of it, and. Say an hour or two afterwards, we looked down again because it was beginning to hurt, and the leech was swelling up on our legs. Of course, we had to burn them off. We weren't allowed to brush them off, so we had to burn them off with a cigarette or a match or whatever was there. So I used to curl up and fall off your legs. Also, of course, I said before the excessive heat. You were sweating after about 20 minutes, where there was a dry heat, and of course, mosquitoes were always. A bugbear, they're always around us.
In the training, did you find that the troops found it easy to move quietly through the rubber plantations?
No, because we had the army boots on, and we had tin hats, a .303 rifle, and the pouches, and we found it very laborious and very hot going through. Whereas when we caught up with the Japanese, all they held, I don't know if this is, when we caught up with the Japanese, all they held them was a rubber shoes with their big toe on its splitter from the rest of their feet for toe holes in trees and places, and just about a pound of rice attached to their belt, and their rifle. And then we were kind of bogged down with all the equipment that was making it very heavy for us.
So the Japanese had much lighter equipment than
Yes, they could skim from, they could climb trees very quickly, because many a time that you'd be walking along and you'd hear something whiz past your head and it was a rifle shot, and the Japanese were up in a coconut tree or a palm tree somewhere, and they'd shinned up with the aid of these shoes and things. And of course we used to laboriously with the water bottles, and we found it hard, especially as we had no training for all that in England, because we were down in the shelters most of the time at Richmond Park before we left for Malaya, and we had no idea of jungle training at all, because compared to the Japanese, we were going through laboriously, and the tin hats were weighing down on your head, and you were sweating all the time, whereas they mostly had the peak cap with the star on it, and because we'd be bogged down in the paddy fields with the heavy boots on, and it's a job to pull your feet out.
Did you have special jungle camouflage uniform?
No, nothing like that at all. Just the ordinary. We had 3/4 length trousers. They were turn-ups, the puttees and the heavy military style boots, and a rifle, bayonet, water bottle, and have a sack on your back and your pouches for your ammunition.
When you were doing that training in the rubber plantations at Alor Star, were the men complaining about the equipment?
Well, yes, they did complain a lot about how heavy it was, and also the prickly heat that was coming through from the equipment, and also across the heat, and that was it was one of those things that you found impossible to carry on with, but you do it. You look back on it now and you think, well, how stupid it was. Yeah, and you just remember that we hadn't any idea of jungle training at all or what it was all about. We were fresh out from Richmond Park in Surrey where we were training, and as I said, we'd been down in the shelters most of that training, and we only got about 6 months training in the jungles of Malaya, and it was all mostly, it was so dark with just the sun just coming through the rubber trees, with just patches of sunlight on the ground all the time, and it was one you were continually hot all day long with the humid heat.
When you complained, did you complain amongst yourselves, or did you complain to
your NCOs? No, we just complained amongst
NCOs.
Ourselves. No, just amongst ourselves, we complained about that. But, we were being recruited, like newly recruited. We didn't know what it was all about. We didn't have the heart to complain, because we were afraid of the authority, in other words.
When the Japanese, when you started to fight the Japanese, can you describe to me how you first came across them, how you first saw action there?
Yes, we were at a place, this is after about 3 or 4 weeks of the campaign, a place called Kampa. And one morning we were, about 6 o'clock, we were woken up with a sergeant, boot right now, back size, waking us up. And he said, you've got to go up just as the dawn breaks and the Japanese have got on position on a hill, and you've got to go up there and dislodge them. Well, we did that, we followed him up, and of course, on our way up the hill, there was some of our troops had been out before us and couldn't dislodge the Japanese because they were on this hill. And down about, the end of the valley down below on the road, they had some tanks as well. So we were coming up to try and dislodge them off the hill. And when we got up to the top, the Japanese retreated down the other side of the hill, and we saw them disappearing. And I saw a dead Japanese officer there. That was my first one, which had been killed. And I searched him. I was a lance corporal at the time, but anyway, I searched him, and I found inside his pocket, I found a map of a school, a school map, and in on the map was red marks of all the British positions of that area. And anyway, I also took a wristwatch off him, and I kept that as a souvenir, and I gave the map over to an officer, Captain Vickers. And then we stayed. We stayed in this position most of the day long. We couldn't get down the other side of the hill because they'd entrenched on the other side of the hill, and so we were digging some trenches to protect ourselves from the road where the Japanese had some tanks. And at that moment, the Japanese fired from the tanks from the hill right into the trench that we were digging, and killing a few of the East Surreys. One fellow was named Pierce at Mount Bowie, killing some of the East Surreys in the trench, from this side in the trench. And we couldn't move them. We went to move them. We put this fellow badly injured to take him to the back in the lines to get some medical for him. And all we did was find two planks. Well, another fellow and myself put him on these planks. He was very badly injured. All his head was bleeding. And as we lifted him up on the planks, so the middle of the planks caved in and he fell back on his head. Well, we just couldn't move. And he died there. And then what with the rest of the British soldiers who had been killed by the sniping, different things, it began to smell after about 6 or 7 hours.
Smell the body.
Yeah, and we were just pinned there. We couldn't move either up or down. We were just stuck on this place until darkness fell. Some Indian troops were sent up again to go down up the hill to dislodge the Japanese. But they came back. They went down screaming and shouting, but they came back in about 20 minutes with all their rifles and things thrown away. They came running back. And so we stayed there all night long. And just at that, I say it was about 10, it was very dark. We hear the Japanese shouting and giving orders, which was very terrifying for us being so young, because I was only 20 at the time. And they were shouting and screaming. And all of a sudden, I heard a rushing sound, and a Japanese burst through right in the dark on top of us in this trench we've been all day long. And we immediately withdrew down the hill, and they threw, they had a kind of a stick grenade, and they threw it behind us. We ran down, and we weren't very brave, admitted. We were caught by surprise, and we all withdrew quickly. And an officer stopped us, to Captain Vickers again, and he said, "I want you all to lie in formation, one behind the other." And he said, "And when the order comes to withdraw back down into the valley again, I want the first ones to withdraw, one, two, three, if you know what I mean, the first ones to come all the way back, so the last ones at the end of the line would be the last ones to go down." And we waited until the order came to withdraw, and we could still hear the shouts of our own. Corporal Boyce was one, I know, in the Asaris. I could hear him shouting, "I'm here, help." But it was so dark down in the valley with the rest of the Japanese down there that we all just came back, and we formed up at the bottom of the road, and we marched off again to another part of Malaya, because it was all withdraw, trucks, walk, withdraw, trucks, and walk. But you see, I can go on for, I mean, that's only just one day.
You said that in this day of action, fighting against the Japanese, you could hear them to start off with shouting orders. Did they ever shout to you in English?
Yeah, we could hear them saying, "I'm here, I'm here." And because we didn't know who it was so black and dark. And we never kind of, to tell you the truth, we were so scared that it was everybody. I mean, I'm telling the truth, it was everybody to get out as quick as they can, because we didn't know anything about the jungle warfare at all.
So this was a kind of psychological warfare tactic they were adopting,
that's
was
that's
it?
That's right,
so that
to lure
you didn't
us,
know where
yeah,
these voices were
that's
coming
right,
from.
Because these other ones, you see, I just told you when we were in the night time, just before, when the Japanese burst on the top of the, on this, we were three quarters of the way up this hill, you see, and they come up the hill, right on top of us, you see. They've been shouting before, and we hadn't answered. But then they came, and they must have heard us talking, because next thing they'd burst right on top of us, you see, and we all scrambled out quick, and ran down the hill in this line to form up, to get away in orderly fashion, you see. But
had you been warned that they might adopt the psychological warfare?
No, we hadn't, because we were the first in action, you see, and we'd never known like the conduct of the Japanese, because we never fought them before. Even we were the first kind of white people. It was only afterwards in Burma, later on, that they got to these tactics, you see, of knowing what they were doing.
What happened after this day of fighting, which you've just described?
Well, then, you see, we all form up on the roads, and the trucks come along again with orders to withdraw to make another stand in different places. And the next place was a place called, I think it was Guran, you see, G-U-R-U-N. But this place I'm talking about now, Guran, rather Kampa, was a place where we did do very well against the Japanese in the Malayan campaign, not the British troops. But that was about the only part of Malaya that we did make a stand at all. Just because, as I said before, there's only three battalions there, and the Indians weren't reliable. It was the Punjabis and the Sikhs. The Sikhs went across the Japanese. They surrendered in a lot of cases. Some of them said they were. I mean, I've heard them say myself. I won't give the language that they said, but we know fight no aeroplanes. And with that, they threw their rifles and things away, you see.
You mean they objected to
strafed? Exactly. Yeah, because there was no aircraft at all. All we had was old wildebeest, which were shot out of the sky. And we had no air support at all. And we were continuously strafed night and day. Well, the Japanese, you could see the Japanese pilots in the zeros.
You said that there was another attempt at making a stand at Guran.
Yeah.
Can you describe what happened there?
Yeah. We were withdrawing as usual, and we dug this trench early in the morning, and we were all in these trenches again, and the Japanese evidently had landed behind us, and we were all just looking in the forward position for the Japanese to come this way, and we heard then some tanks, and the tanks came up behind us, and the Japanese came in this way. The only way of escaping was to turn to our left. Well, previous to that, everybody was saying, this is the last time we'll probably make it. So they started offering cigarettes. Well, I didn't smoke, so I said, no, thanks, not for me, I don't smoke. But with that moment, we could see the Japanese coming through the jungle. And a fellow named, I forget his name now, he was a corporal, he got hit. And we had to get out again quickly because they come in from this way, the Japanese, and from our rear.
From the front and from the rear.
That's right. And so the only way of escape was across the paddy again to make towards the railway. Well, this chap, corporal, he got hit, and there was no room. If he was hit, it was just too bad. So he was hit in the leg, and he couldn't move with us. So we propped him against a tree, put a rifle in his hand, and gave him some water, and we just left him there. And we got out through towards the railway, lines. And going across towards the railway lines, we found all about 50 bicycles which the Japanese had used, which they looted from places, you see, as they took these villages. And they used to cycle through the jungle paths on these bicycles, and we'd come across these bicycles, and we made our way to the railway track. And again, we formed up in the place, I don't know, but we all seemed to meet together again under the officers, and we said, right, stay there, and we'll form up again, wait for the trucks, and withdraw again down towards Singapore. All the way it was hopping these different places all the way back.
Did the British troops use cycles?
No, we never used cycles. We was foot slogging all the time, and we were, sometimes we'd march all night and all day long, and you'd fall asleep marching. You were so tired. We never stopped. We never had any rest at all during that 10 weeks. We were marching and fighting and withdrawing all the time, all the way back to Singapore. I can give you instances, but it's not, it's, um, for for instance, when we got chased up another hill by the Japanese, and the faster you tried to get away from them, so it was like a nightmare. The faster you tried to get away from them up these slippery hills, and you got up two steps and you came back one, and they were down below shouting and screaming, and that was a nightmare, really. I can still see it now, trying to get up the hill, get away from them, slipping back again, and they were there. But you eventually all kind of stick together and disperse and meet up again in somewhere in the jungle with the rest of the POWs, or the rest of the troops. And we made this. We stood at ground for about a day, as I've just related. Another place was there was some Ipoh. We didn't stay long at Ipoh. There was daily incidents like that all the way back to Singapore. But of course you see your friends dead, like here and there, somewhere in the jungle they've got hit. Because as you're walking through the jungle during the withdrawal, you get these bullets keep on whizzing past your ears. But I can tell you, on the last stage of the journey to back to Singapore, we got cut off. This is a very little known incident. We got cut off in a place called Bukit Timah, that's near Johor Bahru. And we had to hold each other's bayonets. An officer had a compass, because we were cut off, to try to make our way to the rest of the troops at Bukit Timah. And this officer had a compass, and we had to hold each other's bayonets in the dark, not to lose each other. We all, about 300 or 400 of us, found a spot to wait there. And an officer said he'd try and get through to Singapore to get some help for us. He dressed up as a native, and he made it to Singapore. Well, 2 days afterwards, we were told to stand by, because the Navy were going to send three little gunboats. One was called the Grasshopper, and the other was called the Dragonfly. And where we were gathered in this clearing, there was an inlet to the sea, and the Japanese were looking for us. They were all around. They were all looking for us, and we slowly had to wait at dawn until these gunboats came in and sent out some small boats to us. They were rubber dinghies, and one by one, the Japanese were still looking for us. They took about 500 men off. It's a little known incident. It's a miniature Dunkirk, actually, and we got into these little rubber dinghies, and we went out into the heavy sea, and we waited there until the Dragonfly and the Grasshopper picked us up and withdrew us all during the night and early morning, and put us on these two gunboats and took us back to Singapore. And we got about 500 men back to Singapore through this little known incident, called the Dragonfly and the Grasshopper. They were two gunboats from the Royal Navy. And they took us back to Singapore from this place called Bukit Timah.
Could I ask you at this stage whether the way the Japanese fought and performed as soldiers came as a surprise to you?
Yes, because we were told, this is the truth, we were told that they couldn't see very well, and that the Chinese was defeating them easily, and we were given the impression that they weren't all that clever at the war games. But of course they were much superior to us in every sphere, because a lot of them had evidently been fighting in China, and they were the top Japanese troops. I think they were the Imperial Guard in a lot of cases, and we were really no match for them at all.
When you say that you were told that they couldn't see very well, do you mean to say that
their eyes were bad?
And they were short-sighted.
That's right, and that they couldn't see very well. But when we get a bullet come past our ear from somewhere, we just say, so-and-so can see all right. His eyes aren't all that bad. and we used to make a joke of it.
You said that those Indian troops had said that they weren't going to fight aeroplanes,
right,
and that the British forces had no proper air cover. Mm. How much difference did that make?
It made a hell of a lot of difference. A hell of a lot of difference, because you couldn't, because every time you went into a counterattack or was withdrawing anywhere, you were machine gunned by the Japanese, and it was so easy for them. They used to come over us, and you could look and see the pilot, see the head of the pilot in the plane. It was that easy, and we had nothing, no cover at all. You know, you could pick up your rifle and fire at them, but that was a joke. You could see the big red star on it as well on the sides.
Can you tell me what happened to you personally next, once you got to Singapore after this evacuation?
Yes. We were fighting near the race course in Singapore, and the Japanese started to throw firecrackers at us, and we thought it was a machine gun. That was an old trick of the Japanese, firecrackers, and they did sound like rather fire, and you think, well, where's it coming from? Anyway, we were in these positions by the race course of Singapore, and the Japanese opened up, and I got hit in the shoulder slightly, by a bit of a mortar. And an officer said, well, take that man out. So, because I'd about, when he said one take him, about 10 fellas said, I'll take her out, just to get out while they're fighting. Because we've been 10 weeks, coming up the Malay Peninsula. Anyway, I was taken out, and by a roadway, a truck drew up, and some Chinese guerrillas jumped out, and they asked me if I was all right. I said, well, slightly wounded. I wasn't sorry, because it was pretty hot. And they said that they were Chinese communist guerrillas, and they took me to Queen Alexandra Hospital in Singapore. Shall I go on from there?
Well, before we go on to the hospital, can you describe what these guerrillas looked like?
Yeah, they were like Chinese, and they were some of them had no hats, and they just had a little red star on them, and they said they
on what?
On their shoulders, and they said they were the Chinese communist guerrillas that were fighting for Singapore, and I wasn't with them no more than I was about a quarter of an hour, 10 minutes, when they dumped me off at Queen Alexandra Hospital.
But did they have a uniform?
No uniforms, no. No
uniform. So they're in civilian clothes.
Well, yeah.
So apart from this red star on their shoulder, they had no means of identification?
No. I wouldn't have known until they told me that they were.
But they had guns, did they?
Yeah, they had rifles, yeah. They were well equipped. And they had this truck. Yeah, so they dispersed then, I think, amongst the civilian population when they got out of the fighting. But
and what was their attitude towards you? Were they friendly?
Very friendly. Yeah, because to tell you the truth, they were the only ones, as far as we know. If we could ever reach the Chinese communist guerrillas in Malaya, they would have either got us out to safety, but they were the only ones who really could stand up to the Japanese at the time, because they, you know, I think they were more. It wasn't our game. I don't mind admitting, I didn't know anything about it. I was in Civvy Street, 6 months before that, I'd never even been out for the day to the seaside.
So once they took you to the Alexandra Hospital, what happened to you then?
Well, I was seen by a doctor, and I was regarded as lightly wounded. And I was taken upstairs, and the heavy wounded were taken down on the ground floor, ready for the operating theatre. Well, I'd also had a jungle ulcer on my foot, which was very painful. And I won't go into details of what I did to it to relieve the pain, but I'll get onto the basic. I've been there about 2 days. I was upstairs when I heard this crackling, this rifle fire crackling. And I thought, well, that's not our guns, because I heard so much Japanese gunfire. It was a kind of a crackle. So I looked out of the window and I saw in the grounds of the hospital some Japanese behind some bushes, all camouflaged, had all bits of twigs and bushes stuck up the back of their belt. And I